I begin reading it in Ezekiel chapter 10. We'll read the first 7 verses. Ezekiel. I hope my Bible is just a little bit past the middle. Then I looked, and behold, in the firmament that was above the head of the cherubims, there appeared over them, as it were, a sapphire stone, as the appearance of the likeness of a throne. And he spake unto the man clothed with linen, and said, Go in between the wheels, even under the cherub, and fill thine hand with coals of fire from between the cherubims, and scatter them over the city. And he went in my sight. Now the cherubim stood on the right side of the house when the man went in, and the cloud filled the inner court. Then the glory of the Lord went up from the cherub and stood over the threshold of the house, and the house was filled with the cloud, and the court was full of the brightness of the Lord's glory. And the sound of the cherubim's wings was heard even to the outer court as the voice of the Almighty God when he speaketh. And it came to pass, and when he had commanded the man clothed with linen, saying, Take fire from between the wheels, from between the cherubims, then he went in and stood beside the wheels, and one of the cherubs stretched forth his hand from between the cherubims, unto the fire that was between the cherubims, and took thereof and put it into the hands of him that was clothed with linen, who took it and went out. Lord, as we open this chapter, I want to ask that you put in each person's mind the vision of what's actually happening and the significance. This is a difficult passage for us because there is so much that we're not familiar with, not ever having been in the temple or on the temple grounds in a foreign land. And to see what a cherub would be, and to try to picture it in our minds as we look at it and see this thing, to understand the fear that overcame Ezekiel as he stood there and watched this. Put those thoughts in our minds and show us your glory. Show us what it is that we are to glean from this chapter and understand about you. These things we ask in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. This 10th chapter is part of the group of chapters that we've been covering, starting with 8 and 9, 10 and 11. These 4 chapters are all at the same time. It's the same vision where Ezekiel, whose physical body, and we're not sure if his physical body is still there, but he was taken by God and transported over the desert from where he was on out there in the deserts where Saddam Hussein was bombing his own people, and transported them over the desert all the way down into the city of Jerusalem. And now Ezekiel is there, at least with his eyes. He is capable of seeing what is going on in front of him. He is capable of speaking. He's capable of being moved around physically or spiritually, we're not sure, but God takes him and puts him in different places around on the Temple Mount. And on the Temple Mount, you have the temple, the holies, where the priest would go in, this big structure made of stone. It was built by Solomon. And outside of it, there's a court, and then there is a wall that separates the inner court from the outer court. And the only people that could go in the inner court were the priests. And the only people that could go in the outer court were the people that were children of Israel. And then there is a wall outside of that, and on the outside there is where the Gentiles and the non-believers could walk around the city, but they could never go into that presence. Well, he is transported in there, and in these chapters, he is seeing these things, and he's watching, and now, here in chapter 10, he picks up right from chapter 9, and in chapter 9, what happens is God comes off of this palanquin, it's a chariot that he rides. And it's held up by 4 cherubs. And we're going to look a little bit about the description of the cherubs later on in this chapter. These 4 cherubs are surrounding in a square with their wings upstretched, holding a platform, a crystal platform, clear. And on top of the platform is this, as it says in verse 1, there appeared a sapphire stone in the likeness of a throne. A sapphire stone is a carbuncle. Probably the color was a very iridescent blue. Maybe a little bit like that sweater there, but it would be metallic and you would be able to see partially inside of it. And this giant stone, this perfect gem, is in the shape of a throne. And sitting on the throne is the glory of God. God Himself. Now, back in chapter 9, this person that is sitting on the throne gets off of the throne and goes and stands on the... There's an entranceway. Just like you see this platform here. Well, you see these two big pillars? This is probably similar in construction to the way it was to the entry of the temple. There were 7 steps that came up, stones that came up, and on top of the 7-stepped tiers was a platform like this, and 2 huge pillars, which are talked about by Solomon in Kings, or in Chronicles, where he talks about these 2 pillars, and these are at the front of the entrance to the place of worship, where all the people were to bring their sacrifices and give them to the priest, and he was to offer them at the altar outside. And once a year, the priest would go in through this gateway, back through the inner place where they would burn all incense and they would have the showbread with the 12 pieces that was to be changed every day. Back beyond that, there was a curtain, just like this, that went all the way to the ceiling to the floor. And behind that curtain was the Holy of Holies. And in the Holy of Holies, there was a table, a little bit smaller than this table. And on top of that table was the Ark of the Covenant that Moses had carried out. And inside of that was the 10 Commandments. And above that table were 2 pictures, 2 statues, if you will, that represented the 2 cherubs, 2 of the cherubs. And they stood on either side of this table and they stretched their wings out and their wings just touched over top of this ark. And so no one saw what those cherubs looked like unless they went in there. And the only person that went in there was the high priest, and he went in once a year. So what those cherubs looked like on the inside, no one but the high priest did. However, there were carvings in the doors that went into the temple that were also pictorials of the cherubs. But you couldn't be there unless you were a priest, unless you were 30 years old. So Ezekiel had never seen them. He had never seen the carvings on the door. And so he didn't know what they looked like, although they were described to him. Just as I'm telling you what it looks like, but you don't really know what it looks like, and neither do I. But I can describe it as best I can. Well, God comes over here on the right side, are these 4 cherubs, huge, lifted up, with this platform and this throne on top of it, and the God that was on top of it, he comes down and he stands right here about where I'm standing on the platform at the entrance of the temple, and he calls and he says, bring forth the destroyers in chapter 9. And it says, 7 men came, and they came in from the gates of the north, which would be over there to the left, as if they were to come through that door on the side. And they came in and they walked over, and they 6 men with their clubs of destruction stood before him, and he also had another man who was clothed with linen, and he told the man who was clothed with linen, who had an inkhorn by his side, to go throughout the city and to write on the forehead of all those that were saddened by the wickedness of God's people, to write on their foreheads a mark. We talked about that last time. And then the 6 men with their weapons of destruction, their clubs, were to go out through the whole city and kill every man, woman, and child that didn't have the mark on their forehead. And here we are at chapter 10. That has happened. The man with the inkhorn has come back and he says, it is finished. So, what do we know? We know we're in Jerusalem. We know that the Lord had been standing here However, right now in chapter 10, he has gone back up and he's now sitting back up on the throne. But it doesn't say that here, but we get that as we get down a little bit further. We know that the man with the inkhorn has come back. And now God looks down to the man with the inkhorn, the man who's clothed in linen, and he says, go over to the four cherubs as they stand there and their wings are roaring like a thunderous waterfalls coming down as they beat their wings to hold the cherubs, to hold this palanquin, this throne up in the air. He says, go back, and in the midst of these four creatures, as they stand there, is this pillar of fire, which is more than just a pillar of fire. It's a furnace that would melt everything and anything that approached it. And God tells this man to go over there and reach his hand into that and take out coal and scatter them over the city. As you first read this account, and I'm sure that not many people have read this account, and probably this isn't one that we study very often ourselves. Certainly, I thought about this as I was preparing for this sermon. I said, isn't this amazing? If I had documentation that was beyond doubt of an encounter with an alien being, and I was able to describe that alien being, and I was able to describe how he transported, and I was able to describe the vehicle that he used, and the words that he said, and the thoughts that he had, and I was able to write those things down and describe them to you accurately, how much would this world give for that? And yet here we have in our scriptures, buried in this book called Ezekiel, which hardly anybody in the world reads, and the 10th chapter in the book of Ezekiel, who hardly anybody that even reads the book of Ezekiel thinks very much about, and yet here we have described to us a man's encounter with the Creator, talking to him, listening to him, seeing how he thinks and what he does and his purposes. And we read over it and we say, I don't understand it, and we go on. And so we're going to look into chapter 10 today, and we're going to try to understand what is it that God is trying to get across to us out of chapter 10, and not just look at the words and the pictures that we try to paint in our minds, but to understand what does that picture mean? Why did God say in the beginning that there was the appearance of a throne? Why is the first thing that comes out of his mouth, as Ezekiel looks up, what does he see? Because what Ezekiel sees is important. Because God put it in Ezekiel's mind to look and to observe certain things. And what he observes and what he writes down is critical for us to understand. And two things I see. He sees the coals and he sees this throne. And so our first thing I want to do in these verses 1 through 7 is talk about these two parts that Ezekiel focuses in on. This blue throne and these coals. Most people think of coals. If you think of coals, you think of a man reaching in and taking this fire and throwing it on the city and the city bursting into flames and it destroying it. We think of Sodom and Gomorrah. We think of the flames and the sulfur and the flames coming down and raining down from the sky and destroying the wickedness of man. That's the first picture that I thought of when I thought of it. So I said, it must be that these coals were meant as a symbol by God to show how he was going to destroy the evilness in the city of Jerusalem. Then you go back to chapter 9. The evilness and the wickedness. Those wicked people are already dead. But who was left? Only the righteous. Only those that have the mark on their forehead that are saved because they sought after God's will in their life. So these coals aren't going to be dumped on wicked people that need to be destroyed and thrown into the lake of fire. These aren't the people from Sodom and Gomorrah. These are believers. These are the people that I'm speaking here to this morning. Now, what does it mean when God says that He is going to reach in the midst of these four cherubs into this column of terrible, all-consuming fire and throw these coals upon us? Turn with me to Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 5, because this is probably the clue to understanding what it is about these coals that God is trying to portray to us. This is Isaiah. This is 125 years before the occurrence here with Ezekiel. 125 years before Isaiah, who was also a man who was very attuned to the will of God and to the wickedness of God's people, and was very concerned about the fact that God's people, those that belonged to Him, were rebelling against Him, and that they didn't care anymore about what He thought, and they were doing whatever it was that was important to them in their lives, without regard of what God thought was important. But they were still God's people. And this is what he says in verse 5. Then said I, this is Isaiah speaking, woe is me! For I am undone. Why? Because he stands before the God that Ezekiel is standing before. He is standing before the same thing that Ezekiel saw. He's standing before these cherubs. He's standing before the throne of God. He's standing before the platform that the throne is on. And on top of it is the glory of God, the Son of God, the one who is the creator of everything in all his majesty. And when Isaiah sees this, he feels like Ezekiel. He feels like everyone that sees this should feel undone, unworthy, ready to be consumed. Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims. Now, a seraphim is not a cherub. It's a different creature. But they also accompany the Lord at times. And one of the seraphims flew unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs, because he cannot even touch it. He took this coal from the altar with tongs, and he laid it upon my mouth and said, lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin has been purged. I believe, back in Ezekiel chapter 10, that what has happened is that there is a very, very, very small remnant of the children of Israel that are left. And their hearts are saddened. They have been scattered all throughout. They're like Ezekiel. They're scattered in foreign lands. They're off in some God-forsaken place in the middle of nowhere, not knowing what is going to happen to them. Afraid because they want to go back home, but they can't because they're slaves. They're captive. And it's because of the wickedness of God's people that this all came about. And now God is saying that wherever you are, whatever state you find yourself in, you can be purged of your sins and your iniquity. Because there is an altar that has been prepared by God. There is a flame and a fire on that altar that consumes sin. That sin, that sacrifice will be consumed. But we have a way of escape. Our way of escape is through the sacrifice on the altar. And we know that to be something that is not understood here yet by Ezekiel, but will come about. We'll look into that in a minute. The other thing I want to look at, other than the coals, is this throne. Ezekiel is standing there. He looks up and he sees the throne. And then it says down here, in verse 4, it says, and the glory of the Lord went up from the cherub and stood over the threshold of the house. But once again, as he's looking up at the throne, and he sees the glory of God sitting on the throne up above, there off to his right, because he's probably standing back here about where the books would be, and he sees the throne, and he sees the Son of God get up off the throne and come down and hover or stand over top of the threshold, and he still sees the empty throne. What does it mean when God comes off the throne? I thought about that. I said, isn't that interesting? How many times has God come off of his throne? There's not a lot. There are very few references to the times when God left his throne and came and visited man. And so I'd like to look at some of them and see if there's a pattern that is developed. When does God leave his throne? And what is the purpose for him leaving his throne? And should we take the significance of those repetitive cases and that pattern that might be developed and apply it here to understand this passage? And so go right back to the beginning of Genesis, and the first time that I see God left his throne is when he walked with Adam and Eve in the cool of the day. God left his glory. He left the place of separation because of that the pillar of fire that demanded perfection to approach him. He left it and walked with Adam and Eve in the cool of the day to fellowship with us. He sought to know us and to converse with us and to love us and to speak with us and to have communion with us. There's another time when it says in the scriptures that God was walking on the earth and visited men. And I see that time is given in Genesis chapter 18, where Abraham was sitting in his tent in the heat of the day with a tent flap over top of him, and he sees off in the distance, he sees the Lord walking down the path. And he recognizes him for who he is, and he stands up and runs and bows down before him and calls him Lord. And God comes to Abraham for a purpose. He says, if you go back and read the passage, it says that he has come to tell him that from Abraham's bow will come a seed. His purpose is to tell Abraham that from him, from his wife and his own flesh, will come a seed. And that seed was talked about where? Back in Genesis chapter 1. Right after Adam and Eve sinned, God told Eve that from you will come a seed, which will bring back the relationship that is broken by the sin of Adam and Eve as they broke God's word there in the garden. But he promised them that there would someday come a seed, and that seed would establish a way again. And here, later on in chapter 18, he tells Abraham, from you will come this seed. So he has come back to man once again to tell us that he has not forgotten his promise, that he is going to provide a way for us to approach him, and it is going to come through the seed. There's another passage. It's given in John, the Gospel of John, first chapter. Verses 1 through 5 and also 14. And you know the passage that says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. Let me read it, because I don't want to misquote it, because it's very important that you see that these are all talking about the same event, where God says that he is going to leave his glory and come and visit man because he has a purpose in mind. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. It was up there on the throne. It was on top of the place that was unapproachable by man. And the Word was God, and the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was nothing made that was made. And in him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shined in darkness, and the darkness could not comprehend it. Even though it was revealed to us, even though we could see it, even though Ezekiel could look up and see that man on the throne, he could not comprehend it. Verse 14, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. The third occurrence that we're talking about here, God leaves the throne on high with His place with the Father that He was always from the beginning, and He leaves it, and He comes to earth, and He takes on flesh for what purpose? To establish communion with us. To establish fellowship with us. To become the seed that was promised, that He might go to the altar and become the sacrifice. That we would have a way into the very heat of God's wrath through His body, as we said this morning. There is another occurrence which is given to us in Acts. You know the place. It's when Stephen was being stoned. As Stephen was down there on his knees, being smitten by the men who would not hear of this seed that was given to them, of this sacrifice that was made, of this way that was made into the Holy of Holies. And Stephen tried to tell them. They would not hear it. They stopped their ears. They began to shout to try to drown him out. And they threw rocks at him. And as they were throwing rocks at him, it says that he looked up into heaven. And the verse says, I saw the heavens opened and the Son of Man standing on the right hand of God. Jesus stood up from the throne to receive His own. Again, we see the pattern where God has left the throne. He has stood up from the throne because He wants to establish a fellowship with His creature. His creature that was a sinner and yet has become redeemed. There is another passage I like to read in Psalms. Psalms chapter 40. I waited patiently. This is David speaking. I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined unto me and heard my cry. Up there on the throne, as high and as mighty as He is, God hears your cry. I don't care where you are. You could be in the bottom of the deepest cesspool in the universe, and you cry out, and on the throne, He hears you. He will come to you. Wherever you are, whatever condition you are in, whatever you have done, whatever you are afraid of, God hears you and He will come to you. And He will incline unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my goings. And He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust and respecteth not the proud, nor such as hath turned aside to lies. Many, O Lord my God, are the wonderful works which Thou hast done and Thy thoughts which are to usward. They cannot be reckoned up in order unto Thee. If I would declare and speak them, they are more than can be numbered. Sacrifices and offerings Thou didst not desire, mine ears hast Thou opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings hast Thou not required. And now, verse 7 and 8 is not David speaking. 7 and 8 is the son of David speaking. It's the seed. The seed begins to speak here in verse 7 and 8. And listen to what the seed says. Then said I, lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me. I delight to do Thy will, O my God. Yea, Thy law is within my heart. That same passage is written in Hebrews. And it is very clearly described and ascribed to the one that sat on the throne, that left His place of glory and came and dwelt among us. The Word that became flesh. The seed that was given and promised there in the beginning of man's sin. Now, if you look at the beginning here in chapter 10, and then it says, "Then I looked, and behold, in the firmament that was above the heads of the cherubim, there appeared over them, as it were, a sapphire stone, as the appearance of the likeness of a throne. But it's empty." In verse 4, it's empty. Because God seeks sinners. And he left that and came to us. Now, let me read verse 6 through 17. And I'm going to go back to 6 again because I want to pick up some of the things that are not clear in the King James here in verse 6 and 7 and later on in verse 13. Because we miss a lot when we read this without understanding what it is that is included in the Hebrew. "And it came to pass that when he had commanded the man clothed with linen, saying, 'Take fire from between the wheels, from between the cherubims,' that I went in and stood beside the wheels. And one cherub stretched forth his hand from beneath the cherubs unto the fire that was beneath the cherub, between the cherubims, and took thereof and put it into the hands of him that was clothed with linen, who took it and went out. There appeared in the cherubims the form of a man's hand under their wing. But when I looked, behold, the four wheels of the cherubims, one wheel by one cherub, and another wheel by another cherub, and the appearance of the wheels was as the color of a beryl stone, which is a bluish green like an emerald. And as for their appearance, they four had one likeness, as if the wheel had been in the midst of a wheel." In other words, each one of these cherubs, each one of these creatures, which has four faces in the four different directions, one of an ox, one of an eagle, one of a lion, and one of a man, has four faces on each one of these cherubs. And each one of these has wings, two to cover themselves, two to hold up the platform, and two to fly with. And under each one of their wings are hands that are capable of reaching out and doing things. And each one of them, beside their feet that go down, and they stand when they finally come and land upon the earth, each one of them has one of these wheels on the side of them. And it says that their wheels are like wheels in the middle of a wheels. It's as if we have one wheel that goes this way and another wheel that goes this way, as if one wheel is in the middle of the wheel, so that when the creature moves, it doesn't turn its head, the wheels never turn, but it is capable of moving in any direction without turning. And it says in here that covering their wings and their backs and their heads and their wheels, their eyes everywhere, looking, eyes all over their backs and their hands and their arms and their wings and the wheels. And all four of these creatures, as they stand there, they have these things. And they're all alike. And as for their appearance, they four had one likeness, as if the wheel had been in the midst of the wheel. When they went upon their four sides. They turned not as they went, but to the place where the head looked, they followed it, and they turned not as they went. And their whole body, and their backs, and their hands, and their wings, and the wheels were full of eyes round about, even the wheels that they four had. As for the wheels, it was cried unto them in my hearing, O wheel! And every one had four faces. The face was the face of a cherub. Now this is interesting. Because earlier it says that they had four faces. One was the face of an ox. But ox is not mentioned here. But instead it puts in the word cherub. Some would say that that's a scribal error. I don't think it's a scribal error. I don't think God makes scribal errors. One was the face of a cherub, and the second was the face of a man, the third was the face of a lion, the fourth was the face of an eagle. And the cherubims were lifted up This is the living creature that I saw by the river Kebar. And when the cherubs went, the wheels went by them, and when the cherubs lifted up their wings to mount up from the earth, the same wheels also turned not from beside them. When they stood, these stood, and when they were lifted up, these were lifted up also. For the spirit of the living creature was in them. There's two words here that are given for the words wheels. If you go back to verse 6, the first wheel is called, in the Hebrew, called Galgal. And the second wheel in that is the end of the verse, is the word called Openim. Openim is a wheel, like we look. If I go out of my car, I got four wheels. I can stand next to that thing. I look at it. It's round. It turns. That's a wheel. It's an object. But the first wheel is not an object. The first wheel is a dynamic, a motion, a whirring, a whirling sound. When I was a boy, my brother and I, we used to take our bikes and turn them upside down, and we used to crank that thing as fast as we could. Why did we do that? Because we loved to hear the sound that that wheel made as it spun around there. That's the sound that Ezekiel hears from these wheels. He hears this whirring, whirling, whooshing, tremendous sound coming from the wheel that is beside each one of these cherubs. Also over in verse 13, that wheel that's over there is this wheel that the first wheel is the word for openim. That is, it's the physical, round, cylindrical surface that we think of as a wheel. And the second one where he cries out and says, it was cried unto them in my hearing, oh, wheel. It's the dynamic component. It's the thing that shows that this is not a mechanical device. It's not me turning the crank and hearing the thing go around. But the wheel is alive. It's a living thing. There is no machine at all in any of this. Every piece that is described is a living creature, a living thing. It is all part. Everyone is distinctly different, and yet everyone is uniquely alive. And so, now I want to talk about, in this passage, what the important thing is, the description of a cherub. We think of a cherub as a single entity. And yet, each one of the cherubs had what? Four unique faces. Four unique characteristics. Why does one of the faces get eliminated and replaced by the word cherub? Which one is it that's significant? The one that was replaced is the ox. The ox is the only one that God would permit to be a sacrifice. So it replaces the cherub with this characteristic of being a sacrifice. One that would yield up his life that the rest would be able to live. As I look at this cherub with all its attributes and the different characteristics, there are four of them around, and each one is called a cherub, but together they are called a cherubim. When you put the I-M on the end of the word in the Hebrew, it means plural. But when it speaks of the cherubim, it speaks of them as one. Because even though they are four cherubs, they are one creature. How is that possible? When each one has his own separate identity, each one with four characteristics, each one with different things that it's capable of doing by itself. It's the same way that God has made us. I look out here at the people that are here, and every one of you is unique. Every one of you has characteristics that are unique to you, and I will never be what you are or you are. God has made each one of you specifically for His purposes. The word cherubim has three attributes to it in the Hebrew. It has three parts to its meaning. And the first one means to bless, to worship. These cherubs were worshipers of the glory that they lifted up. They bathed in the glory of the one that sat on the throne above them all their existence. It was part of their fulfillment, part of their joy, part of what they were in existence for and lived for, to be bathed by the glory of the God that was on the throne above them. Just as that is a trait that those that come to know Him, who walking through the sea, through His death, we too are able to share in that privilege. The second part of the word cherub means to intercede. And this is where all the eyes come into play. And this is where the as we talked about earlier, that the lightning shot out from these creatures all around, and no one could approach the throne of God. Because unless you were righteous, you could not approach the holy God of Israel. That's what the eyes on their backs and their wings and the wheels, they look everywhere. They scour all 360 degrees around, looking to make sure that nothing of sin approaches the most holy that sits above. And anything that is unholy and approaches God will be consumed. The third attribute of a cherub is to be mighty. They have the power. They have the might to destroy unholiness that approaches the Most High. But where are we? What would give us the right, as human beings in our sinful condition, and anybody that's here, you still are made of flesh, you still sin in your life, and if you deny that you are as yet committing sins in your life, it says in the Scriptures that you make God a liar. What gives us the right to approach God through this? To think that somehow we could get by the cherubs? We can't. And so He comes down off of the throne and leaves the cherubs and comes and stands in the temple platform as if He is bidding people to come to Him. Come through me. I am the door. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. That's what Jesus said, and that's what He meant. And that fits perfectly with chapter 10 of Ezekiel. The last part I want to talk about, I'm really running over, but I think it's important that we finish chapter 10. Begin reading in verse 17. When they stood, these stood up, and when they were lifted up, these were lifted up also, and the spirit of the living creatures was in them. Then the glory of the Lord departed from off the threshold of the house and stood over the cherubims. And the cherubims lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth in my sight. When they went out, the wheels also were beside them, and every one stood at the door of the east gate of the Lord's house, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them above. This is the living creature that I saw under the God of Israel by the river Kibar. And I knew they were cherubims. Every one had four faces apiece, every one four wings. And the likeness of the hands of a man was under their wings, and the likeness of their faces was the same faces which I saw by the river Kibar. And their appearances and themselves, they went every one straight forward. What's important about this last passage here is that God leaves the threshold and goes back and mounts up on the throne again, and the throne is now going to depart. What is significant? What's significant here is that the glory of the Lord departs from man. If you go back to Genesis chapter 4, verse 16, there's a verse back there that talks about Cain. And it says that God came to Cain and spoke with him and said, Cain, if you bring the right sacrifice, sin lieth at the door. You have control over it. All you have to do is allow your sin to be forgiven by the seed. All you have to do is allow the right sacrifice, which was the death of a lamb, which was the type of Christ, to be shed for you, and you have an access back into the way to the throne of God and Almighty. But if you deny this, if you walk away from this, you have no hope. And then it says, and Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. And so it is with all unbelievers. They choose to walk away from the way that God has for us. They leave. There is another passage which is given in Judges chapter 16. You know the passage, it's Samson. When Samson was constantly, he was a child of God. Make no mistake about it. Samson will be in glory with God. He will not be in hell.